You're listening to In the Vault, a KPMG banking industry podcast series.
Hi, everyone. I'm Liz Lamadou, a principal in KPMG's Banking and Capital Markets Tax Practice. And today I am joined by my colleagues John Tomaszewski and Kira Bivens, both from KPMG's Compensation and Benefits Tax Practice. Welcome, Kira and John.
Yeah, hi, Liz. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
So today we're going to talk about some of the tax consequences on banking organizations and on their employees related to corporate aircraft, particularly personal use of corporate jets. A lot of our banking clients have corporate-owned aircraft that they use for business reasons or partial ownership of jets through a timeshare. And I noticed that the IRS had a recent announcement about a new audit campaign related to personal use of business aircraft. So Kira, can you tell us more about that?
Of course, Liz. Yeah, so the IRS recently announced a plan to begin audits on business aircraft involving personal use. The IRS indicated that they expect to start with 24 to 48 audits. They'll be focused on aircraft usage by large corporations, large partnerships, and high-income taxpayers. The audits will primarily focus on whether, for tax purposes, the use of the aircraft is being properly allocated between business and personal use. John and I weren't entirely surprised by this announcement, honestly. Personally, I've been working in this area since I first joined KPMG's Global Reward Services team. While we had a consistent client base that would come to us with questions related to employer-provided aircraft, it wasn't until the years following 2020, so when the COVID pandemic hit the U.S., that we saw a significant uptick in this benefit. Companies have since expanded their employee benefit offerings, and they've invested in purchasing or leasing aircraft for use by certain employees, particularly their top executives. We also speak with companies pretty regularly that are still considering future aircraft purchases and leases. This increased attention by the IRS to the complex tax rules associated with corporate jets and other aircraft has already raised even more inquiries from our clients here at KPMG.
So when an employee uses a corporate aircraft for personal uses, what are the tax consequences to the employee?
Personal use of an employer-provided aircraft, including for commuting purposes, is going to be a taxable fringe benefit to the employee. And we also have to be concerned it's not just use by the employee, but if the employee's family members, such as a spouse or a child or any guests, also go on the employer-provided aircraft, that will also be a taxable fringe benefit to the employee. So what does that mean? That means for an employee, that's going to be wages subject to applicable income tax and employment tax withholding and reporting on a W-2. For partners, that amount's going to be reported as a guaranteed payment on the partner's K-1. And a couple things just to note here. One is taxable amount can be reduced by the amount that the employee pays for the benefit. The tax law does provide for, you know, reimbursements and takes that into consideration. But before any companies go down that route, just be aware that there's FAA rules on reimbursements. So we suggest, you know, speaking with, you know, the company's legal counsel just on any type of reimbursement arrangements in this space. And then also just around all the admin around this, employers really need to make sure that they're keeping very detailed flight logs, records, so they have all the backup in case the IRS audits them. We're seeing on audits, one of the main focuses that the IRS is looking at is that documentation. Do you know who was on the flight, where they were going, what was the purpose? So anytime there's going to be any type of flights, you know, the companies really need to make sure that their substantiation is very thorough and detailed.
So, John, where do you typically see the responsibility for this fall within the bank? I can see it touching corporate tax. It obviously has implications for the corporate income tax return, and corporate tax is often the first stop for the IRS on any notices and audits. It seems to clearly involve HR, payroll, et cetera. How are banks handling that?
Yeah, so corporate tax should definitely, I think, own the process. A lot of it is tax driven on the employee side. On the employer side, you have deductibility issues, income inclusion issues. So corporate should be owning all of that. You have other issues as well when you get into, you know, depreciation expenses, use tax, things like that. So tax is the main driver. But as you mentioned, clearly there's going to be other service areas internally that are all going to be involved in the process. You have HR who might be in control of, you know, the executives' movements, the flight logs, things like that. You're going to have payroll who's involved on the W-2 reporting. You're going to have the corporate tax team involved. So usually we typically will see is the holder and the driver of all the employer-provided aircraft.
Okay, thanks. That makes sense. But definitely sounds like a lot of coordination is needed across the banking organization.
Correct.
So you guys mentioned maybe a reimbursement for the using the aircraft or putting something, counting it as wages to the employee. But how do employers value the use of that aircraft?
Yeah, so there are a few different ways, the default method being the charter rate method. So this method follows the general valuation rules. It values the flight based on the amount that the individual would have to pay in an arm's length transaction to charter either the same or a comparable piloted aircraft for the same or a comparable flight. So the cost to charter the aircraft must be allocated among all employees on board based on the facts and circumstances, unless either an employee is controlling the aircraft or a written agreement, for example, a partnership agreement or a corporate aircraft policy governs the allocation of the value of the flight. One thing to note here, the cost of a commercial ticket with the same origin and destination cannot be used to approximate the cost of a non-commercial airline flight. So we get a lot of questions from companies. If I look this up and I see the cost of this flight is X, if I were to take one of the major airlines, can I use that amount to approximate this value? The rules specifically provide that you can't. Instead, companies may elect in any given year to use the special valuation method. So that's kind of the second alternative to, or the second option other than the charter rate method. It's called the standard industry fare level method. We call it SIFL. So the SIFL method is much friendlier to the recipient. It results in significantly less imputed income. The value of the flight is calculated using a formula. The formula is based on certain factors such as the weight of the plane, the statute miles of the flight leg, and whether the employee is what is called a control employee. The formula also uses a per mile rate and a terminal charge, both of which are issued by the IRS and Department of Transportation for each 6 month period. One important thing to note here is timeliness. So with limited exception, nearly all of our clients elect to use the SIFL method if it's available to them. That being said, the regulations provide that the special valuation rules can only be used if a certain requirement is met. So if one of the four requirements is met, an employer can use the SIFL method. The first being the employer treats the value of the benefit as wages for reporting purposes within the time for filing the returns for the taxable year in which the benefits provided, that includes extension. Second, the employee includes the value of the benefit and income within the time for filing the returns for the taxable year in which the benefits provided, also includes extensions. Third, the employee is not what we call a control employee. Or fourth, the employer demonstrates a good faith effort to treat the benefit correctly for reporting purposes. If the SIFL method's available and the company elects to use this method, it must generally be used for all of the company's employees during that year with limited exception.
And what is a control employee?
So there are very specific rules in the regulations for what defines a control employee, but essentially it's kind of your top paid executives, directors.
So really that sounds like the employees that are probably using the aircraft, right, Kira?
Yes, exactly.
So are there any special rules or exceptions to imputing the income for this fringe benefit?
Yeah, there are a couple of exceptions to note. First, there's no income imputed for passengers who are under the age of two. So when you see executives, they fly with their family. Any young children who are under two, there's no imputed income for them. In addition, there's an exception, a 50% rule, which means if at least 50% of the passengers on the flight, and it's the passenger seating capacity you have to think about here, if at least 50% are traveling for business, then any personal use, so other passengers who might be flying for personal, you don't have to impute income for them. On this, one of the things about though is that the 50% is based on the seating capacity of the plane. So for example, if the aircraft has 13 seats at least 7 seats need to be business passengers in order for this to apply. It's not 50% of the passenger number. And then one other rule that we see, and there's a favorable way to value these flights under the CIFL method, is, and we're seeing this a bunch more now, is for what's called a bona fide business-oriented security concern. So when companies have their executives fly for security reasons, you know, they're required to fly on the employer-provided aircraft. There's a special methodology in order to value that flight, and it gets them a reduced multiple. So that's something to always keep in mind, that it's a way to reduce the CIFL valuation in situations where there's what's called the bona fide business-oriented security concern.
So I understand that the personal use of the corporate aircraft is a fringe benefit to the employee using it. But what are the tax implications, if any, to the bank itself that's providing this benefit of the aircraft?
There are a couple things to think about from the company perspective. So first, there will be tax implications to the company if the company fails to treat personal use of the employer-provided aircraft as a taxable fringe benefit. Failure to properly treat fringe benefits as taxable could lead to the employer not including amounts in wages when they should have been subject to the applicable payroll taxes and W-2 reporting as well. Under IRS rules, if the employer fails to report and withhold on amounts that should have been treated as compensation, then the IRS is able to collect the missing withholding from the employer in many cases, and they could also collect penalties for failure to properly report income to the employees. In addition to considerations related to imputation of income to the employee, the company providing the benefit will also be disallowed a deduction for expenses incurred for any entertainment use of the aircraft. This includes entertainment use by the employees, their guests, their family members. Entertainment use not only includes personal entertainment flights, such as family vacations, other personal entertainment use, but it also includes business entertainment flights. So this means the trip was sponsored by the company or in part for business purposes, but the primary purpose of the trip was in fact for entertainment rather than business matters. We get a lot of questions on this categorization. The kind of distinction here is that it's kind of an objective. This was for entertainment. So an example would be taking your clients to the Masters. You might talk business, but the primary purpose was being at that game. The company will also be disallowed a deduction for expenses incurred in connection with commuting, even if it's included in the recipient's income. So oftentimes this deduction disallowance is offset by what's included in compensation, but in the specific case of commuting flights, this offset is not allowed. The Treasury regulations provide 4 possible methods to calculate this deduction disallowance to allocate the expenses between entertainment and non-entertainment travel. These methods include the occupied seat and flight-by-flight methods, each of which can be calculated using either hours or miles of the flight. And a taxpayer can choose whichever method yields the most favorable tax answer, but they have to use the chosen method for all flights of all aircraft for the taxable year. We at KPMG have a tool that runs a calculation using all 4 methods for this purpose because we don't always see the same method resulting in the best answer. It depends on the flight log, the purpose of the flights, and the people on the flights themselves. So it does vary from client to client and year to year.
That makes sense to have a tool. I was just thinking that that's a lot of nuances that you just walked through and a lot of calculations and documentation that are falling on the bank to do.
Yes, definitely.
So what are some other considerations, John, of employer-provided aircraft? Anything else we should be thinking about?
Yes, so we've been focusing mainly on the employee tax treatment, the employer deductibility of the flight costs. But then there's a lot of other concerns, both tax and non-tax, that employers need to think about this benefit. So one is, if an employer purchases an aircraft, they have to think about the depreciation and the deduction for the depreciation. There's the ability to take bonus depreciation, but then there's rules on, you know, the level of qualified business use. Is it domestic or international travel? So a lot of different things just on the depreciation side of it. Then there's also sales and use tax implications, federal excise tax implications, things like that. So definitely a lot of other tax issues to think about in addition to, you know, income and the deductibility, you know, need to have internal policies that govern the employer-provided aircraft. You know, you want to get into who can use it, how they can use it. We've seen instances where, you know, if companies don't have very well-written policies, you know, executives may be using the corporate aircraft beyond what the intended scope might be that the company intended. For public companies, they really have to think about this also, because in the proxy, in the summary compensation table, there's a disclosure of all the perks that your named executive officers receive. And employer-provided aircraft is going to be a perk that's most likely going to hit that summary comp table. So public companies really need to be aware of this. There was actually a recent article in the Wall Street Journal about a large company's proxy disclosure issues regarding corporate. So just need to be mindful of how you're disclosing this in your public documents. And so here and I, we're focused on the comp and benefit side of this, but KPMG, we have a big team that's looking at all these different issues, the bonus depreciation, the excise tax, sales and use tax, all different aspects of employer-provided aircraft.
So John and Kira, do all of these rules apply also if you only own a part of an aircraft?
Yes. So these rules apply whether the company owns, leases, or has a fractional ownership in the corporate aircraft.
So in summary, it sounds like companies should ensure that they have a corporate aircraft policy in place that governs any employee use. And then they need to be mindful of documentation, including detailed flight logs that substantiate the employee use. Lots of rules and nuances for companies to properly characterize the corporate aircraft as either taxable or non-taxable to the employee as a fringe benefit, also deductible or not deductible to the bank or company itself for purposes of tax compliance. This sounds like a lot going on. And on top of this, we've got the IRS's recent announcement of increased audit activity. So it seems like a good time for companies to reassess the policies and check their documentation and make sure everything is in compliance in this area. I'm guessing that as painful as an audit might be, and any potential exposure for the bank itself, and including penalties, we have that on one side, and then we also have the potential for employees to be particularly unhappy about income that they weren't aware of. Is that true?
Correct. Especially with the IRS's announcement, we're seeing a lot of clients reaching out, a lot of questions. You want to get ahead of this and at least make sure that all your policies and procedures, you have everything buttoned up in case the IRS does come and audit you.
And we do have tax controversy colleagues as well that have direct experience with this type of IRS audit should it come around in the future. So aside from kind of the preventative initial steps, we also do have colleagues who can assist if an audit does come knocking.
Well, Kira and John, thank you very much. This has been a really interesting discussion. I learned a lot. So I appreciate you talking us through this topic and sharing your insights today. And to our audience, thank you for joining us today. This is Liz Lamadou on behalf of KPMG's Banking and Capital Markets Tax Practice. I look forward to talking again soon.
Thanks for listening to In the Vault with KPMG. Be sure to subscribe to this series to be notified of new episodes.